Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. I am, those of you that don't know me, I am Vicki Booth, and until 6 days ago, I was the lead of the Population Health Metrics team in the Division of Public Health Information Dissemination. That's a new name. Some get used to it. And that is in CSELS, so in the Center for Surveillance, Epi, and Library Services. I took a detail 6 days ago as the senior evaluator for the Division of Community Health for the REACH and the PITCH grants, and so I'm glad to hear chronic disease people and others in here, and if you've got a REACH or a PITCH grant, you're going to be hearing from me very soon. So I try to figure out what's all going on there. And so this afternoon, we're going to talk a little bit, we're going to talk about the redesign and the release of the community health status indicators. We're going to do that in the context of the community health assessment and community health improvement processes, because those are the real drivers of, and that served as the need requirements for the redesign process. Come on in, Chris. Okay, and then we're going to talk about how we looked at the needs that were coming out of these new drivers for community health assessment and tried to address each one and as many as we could with the redesigned CHSI. We're going to have an interactive demo. I'm going to ask you guys, so how many of you guys have seen the new CHSI? CHSI 2015. Yeah, we've done a terrible job of dissemination and marketing, but we did get it out there. It was officially launched on March 10th, 2015, and so now we're really starting to gather that information because you never know exactly how people are going to use it and what they are going to like and what they aren't going to like, even though you have testing all along the way and vetting all along the way. So I'm going to be looking to you guys. Those of you that haven't seen it, you can give me some instant reactions, and then also I'm going to encourage you guys, if you think of something after and you start using it and you want to see more functionality, different data, different displays, we're collecting that, we're gathering that information right now, we're gathering those needs right now, just write to the CHSI mailbox and I'll show you where that is. And then we're going to talk a little bit about, and you'll see some flyers there. So CHSI was designed specifically to work with other existing tools and resources, and specifically the county health rankings and roadmaps, and I'm going to talk a little bit, and we have somebody from the University of Wisconsin here that can also help answer any questions, too, about the relationship between the two. And other tools and resources that we've developed to go along with it, one of those being the calculating and visualizing life expectancy at the census tract. So we're going to talk a little bit about those, and if you're interested, a little bit how you can participate in that project. Okay, so the goals for the redesign. So first of all, I asked if you knew about the new one. How many of you guys knew about the old community health status indicators that was owned and operated by HRSA? Yep, 3, 4, 5. Good, good. So those of you, so you'll be able to see kind of what we've changed. But in doing the redesign, as I talked about, we redesigned it such that, and in keeping with the new requirements in the Affordable Care Act, to help states and locals and hospitals, and I'll go through that in a minute, comprehensively assess health status and identify health disparities, promote a shared understanding of the wide range of factors that drive health. That's one of the things that goals that we have in common with the county health rankings and roadmaps. And then mobilize those multi-sector partnerships. So all of those health system partners that share the responsibility for creating healthy communities, like transportation, like education, like social services, like housing. So it was designed really to highlight how they play in overall population health and to help motivate them to work with you guys to improve health. And just my little note that it was explicit. So I helped support the launch, and my team helped support the launch of the county health rankings. And initially they get about 50% of their data from CDC. And initially my team ran around to all of the programs where they get their data and said, oh, the county health rankings needs your data. And so we helped coordinate that and batched it up and sent it to them. We now have the health indicators warehouse that does that for us. That's something that you guys will hear about here and that grew out of that. And so they designed county health rankings to complement the existing CHSI, and in turn, especially with limited resources, we were not going to duplicate a single thing that they were doing and doing well. So you'll see that as we move through. Our primary stakeholders then are going to be those people that are on the ground conducting the community health assessments and working to improve community health. And that includes the health departments, nonprofit hospitals, and then there's a whole bunch of new players, and I'll say a little bit more about some of them in a minute. But the federally qualified health centers, their regs are now coming online for the types of assessments they have to do in the communities. And the United Way has been playing in this field for a long time. And then there's other community organizations as well. And then, of course, secondarily, we have those multi-sector partners that are going to have to come together if we're going to move upstream and really move the needle on population health. And the legislatures, policymakers, and business leaders that have the resources or the authority to make some of those things happen. And then finally, the general public. So the drivers that I was talking about, and just so you get a sense of the magnitude of what I call it, the tsunami of need that's coming with respect to all of the data and the resources, because you have at least 3,000 nonprofit hospitals that are required by the IRS to conduct their community health needs assessment every 3 years. We'll talk more about the new regulations for them. Then you've got, I just went to the public health improvement training in New Orleans, and I was so amazed at all of the health departments that were in the process of applying for accreditation. That has really picked up steam, and so they're all required to conduct a community health needs assessment and develop a CHIP. They do CHIP, so the community health improvement plan, as a prerequisite for accreditation, and that's on a up to 5-year cycle. Then we have the federally qualified health centers. So potentially there's 2,400 approximately of the health departments. Then we've got another 1,200 of the federally qualified health centers that are playing in this field of assessment. And several states, I think maybe 7-8 states, New York's one of them, I think Wisconsin's one of them, are requiring their local health departments to conduct community health assessments and come up with improvement plans. And then the grants I mentioned, the PITCH grant, the REACH grant, formerly the community transformation grants, they're requiring community health assessments. So what does that look like on the ground? So the blue circles with the crosses, this is the metropolitan Atlanta area, for those of you guys that don't recognize it, home of CDC. So the blue circles with the crosses, those are some of the nonprofit hospitals that are in the metropolitan area. It's not all of them, but it's the bigger systems. All of those green dots, and I have not counted them, I'm afraid to, but all of those green dots are the federally qualified health centers. But if you just think about the nonprofit hospitals, and there's 23 of them there, then you overlay that with the 11 local health jurisdictions in the metropolitan area. And we had one, Cobb County was a community transformation grantee. I haven't looked to see how many more PITCH and REACH grants that we have there. Now you have 34 different organizations without the SQHCs. And United Way is anybody else. 34 organizations that are now going to assess the health status of populations in the metropolitan area and identify disparities, and they're going to engage those communities. And I think with this visual you can see that what a marvelous opportunity for collaboration and leveraging, right? If everybody, let's say, if several of those hospitals pooled their resources, hired some EPIs from the state health and local health departments to conduct a great community health assessment of the entire metropolitan area, then everybody brought their resources and decided in a few areas to move forward, you could really see some progress. It also is a great opportunity for chaos and confusion. Think about those communities. Think about in Atlanta and some of the work that I did. You've got Mechanicsville and Cabbage Town, and these really NPUB, it's a neighborhood planning unit, really poor communities around the stadium in Fulton County. And what are they going to think when the Ninth Hospital comes and says, we're doing a community health needs assessment and IRS is requiring us to engage with you. Give us your input, right? And so, and if everybody was coming with different priorities and different data and different answers and different analysis. So, huge opportunity to align and leverage. Really, really something that we should think about. And this, Atlanta's not unique. This is happening in metropolitan areas all across the country and in rural areas as well. And so let's think about and make sure, and that's another reason why you want to know what your hospitals are doing and you want to encourage that collaboration. And I've done some analysis on the hospitals that did collaborate with public health departments and ones that didn't. We've done a sample of 100 of the first set of CHNAs, and I can tell you the ones that did, we have data now to show they did a much better job of reaching out to the community members, understanding what the community members wanted, and including them in the process. So. Anyway, so I have the exact language here for you as a tool for you. I am not going to read the next two slides to you, but on December 29th, 2014, so the whole first round of CHNAs done by the hospital was done under a proposed regulation that wasn't final and really was not going to be enforced because you can't enforce a proposed regulation. On December 29, 2014, IRS finally released the final sets of regulations, and it has some kind of surprising things that I think you're going to want to know about and will be useful for you to know about when you start collaborating with those hospitals. So the first is this concept of significance. So the hospitals must do the CHNAs and adopt an implementation strategy for addressing significant community health needs at least once every 3 years, and I'll define significant in a few minutes. And so they cannot exclude, they may not exclude from their community, defined community, medically underserved, and that's where, and I have the definition on the next page, those are the ones that are experiencing health disparities, are the ones that don't have adequate access to health care because of a given set of barriers. They cannot exclude low income, or they cannot exclude minority populations who live in the geographic areas from which the hospital's getting their patients. So no more cherry picking partial zip codes. So in doing the hospital, they must solicit. So this wasn't true the first time. The first time around, all they had to do was include somebody with public health expertise. And I'll tell you, ASTO and NACHO and the health departments heard about that and realized, oh my God, the hospitals are just going to hire our epidemiologists and they're going to be set and we're going to be here with nothing and we'll be out of the loop anyway. And so they got together and they wrote a position paper which they sent, and they commented, and they sent that to IRS. And so now the IRS reg says they must solicit input from either a state or a local, at least one health department. And if you give them that input, they must take that into account, and they must document how they did so. Same true for the population. And this is, we'll talk a little bit more, but now they have to identify and solicit input from those medically underserved, low-income, and minority populations, and they must take into account the input that they get from that. And also, the beauty, I really think about, it's not really the IRS that's going to be the driving force or doing compliance, it's the public. So that requirement that they put their CHNAs on their website. So the way I think it's really going to work is people in communities that got a health fair. So after they did all of their assessment, and what they decided was that we're going to have two health fairs in a year, and we're going to do, one of the physical activity running jobs. They're going to look on that, and then they're going to be able to look at Kaiser, where they got a park and bike trails and mobile food markets, and they're going to look at Ascension Health in Florida that are investing in low-income housing. So they're building housing for their communities as part of their community benefit work. And the public's going to write to the people, the hospitals that gave them a health fair, and say, why do we get a health fair and other people get housing? So, and if all those comments, the hospital has to document how they took that into account, not only in coming up with needs, but in generating the priorities. So I told you guys there was a lot of things hidden in this 2014 reg. And so I went through that one. Oh, here's an important one. So the new reg explicitly lays out that, yes, the hospital's access to care is still important, and it can be a priority, but the priority needs can also include adequate nutrition, social factors, behavioral factors, and environmental factors. So those upstream determinants, that can just as easily be a need as screening is a need, or more physicians is a need, which we'll see. And there's the kicker, the very last one, and the one that causes me to lay awake at night. CHNAs for tax years beginning after December 29, 2015, so they gave them a year to kind of digest and I think probably do something about the priorities they were setting, must include an impact evaluation of the actions taken on the needs that were identified in the last CHNA. So if they decided that the priority was more physicians and they hired more, now they have to demonstrate what was the impact on the population that those more physicians, generated. So there are some things, there's some really brilliant things in here such that you're not going to have to lean on them too much. You've got the public and you've got the fact that they're going to have to do evaluations and be accountable for that and send that information to the IRS and make it available. So jumping to and tying back to CHSI, which is what we're here to talk about today. So just quickly, the comments that So how many of you guys have done a community health assessment or worked with the CHNA? Anybody? Did you use a framework to map? So there's lots of frameworks out there. MAP's the one that you'll find on NHS website. But there's also frameworks that on the hospital side. So there's the Association of Community Health Improvement has a framework. The Catholic Health Association has a really nice framework, and it's got a lot of nice tools in it. So all of those frameworks, and it doesn't matter, and a lot of people are using multiple frameworks because you get different things from them, but these are the common steps kind of across all of them. You know, you get your staff together and your team together, and you prepare your plan of how you're going to, the steps that you're going to, and the resources that you're going to need, and you engage the community and hope you start doing that up front and early. Collectively develop a goal, or Matt has you do some visioning, that so everybody's on the same page of where you're trying to get to, and that's a good thing. And then you get into some of the data-driven steps, which is what our team's responsible for, and you conduct the community health assessment right here. It's step four in this. Then you take the products that come out of that community health assessment, and that's where the science meets art, those of you that have gone through the prioritization process, and you put in all of that detailed information with confidence intervals and those kinds of things, and you come up with what the priorities are, and then you develop and implement your plan, hopefully right then. When you implement your intervention, you start your monitoring process of the process and also of the short and medium term outcomes. And then you do your evaluation. I have an engineering background long before I got my MPH. And so I like flow diagrams. And of course, if you've been through this, it's not a nice linear cycle. And sometimes you have to go through some of these steps multiple times. Sometimes you're going back and forth. But anyway, but I use this to talk about, first to point out assessment. And I think that's where public health really likes to stay. We like to define the problems. We like to look at the trends. We like to look at the differences between age groups and race and ethnicity and gender. That's the second step here. And in a three-year process, you got to get through that. And that was some of what we were thinking about in redesigning CHSI, because then, and if you do this prioritization, you know, the way that it's described in the literature, which is very consensus-oriented and transparent, and everybody agrees on the criteria up front, that takes some time. And this is my little monitoring do loop, because what this is really for is to make sure you're on track, because you do not want to get 5 years, 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, and go to do your evaluation and find out something went wrong in month one of year two and the things. And just really quickly, well, so this is all, since it's a three-year cycle for the hospitals and a five-year cycle for the health departments, or even shorter, this is all in a continuous improvement cycle, where you're getting some organizational learning. Nobody gets this right the first time. I can guarantee you nobody gets this all right the first time. But the idea is that you're going to get better at it, and you're going to build more trust, and you're going to do better each time. And it's all built on this shared ownership among stakeholders and that meaningful engagement of the community members, that they're taking ownership of the process and making sure the changes are sustained and the improvements are sustained. And I'll just tell you real quick, so I did some work in the community guide doing systematic reviews, and we were doing tobacco smoking reductions using nicotine replacement gum and other therapies, and a study came in, so we netted it up in the broad search that we did, and we looked at the study, and it was nicotine gum replacement. And so what happened is people called into the helpline. I think this is a fairly common intervention. People call the helpline, smoking quit line. And so in the smoking quit line says, well, you're interested in being part of this study where we're going to send people out nicotine replacement gum. And then, you know, what you have to do is agree to come in, and we're going to check cotinine, and you're going to fill out a couple surveys. And so they got a nice big sample, and they ordered the gum, and they sent it out. And 6 months later, then they're bringing the people in to get checked, and they people come in, and No, they haven't stopped smoking. No, the cocaine levels. And they finally start to talk about and starting to ask them why. Well, they had ordered the gum from a new manufacturer, and they hadn't tried the gum themselves, and the gum burned your mouth really bad, and it was really bad tasting. So there was no uptake of the intervention. But they didn't check, so they had spent all of that money. They had paid for all the lab testing and everything, got all the staff hired, and all for naught, because they didn't follow up with anybody. Did you get the gum? Are you using the gum? And so, you know, that monitoring, I just can't tell you how important that is. So the products that come out of a community health assessment. So first of all, and we're all familiar with this, secondary data analysis, that's probably what we most, that's one of the things I most like to do. So you're going to get indicators, and I'll talk about which ones kind of in a minute, and you're going to compare those indicators, the values of those indicators against your peer counties, national averages, state averages, healthy people targets, the best performing 10% of counties. I'll tip my hat to the county health rankings that provides that information. And you're also going to look at trends, because you could be comparing well on obesity across those benchmarks, but which direction is it going, right? So if you're at 17% for your county, is that coming from 19 to 17, or is it coming from 13 to 17? And that's going to make a difference. And through that analysis, you're going to identify the most prevalent, severe, and important health outcomes and determinants. The next requirement is you need to understand what the community members' priorities are and take that into account. And that's probably not going to be available data for you, although you're encouraged to look at previous assessments and any other, and if there's a United Way and they've done some of that to look for that existing. But you're probably going to be doing some primary data collection and interviews, town halls, and surveys, and you're going to come up with a short set of what the communities think are important, and then you're going to identify your health disparities. And now the hospitals not only have to identify the health disparities in the data, they have to find those people and solicit their input, and you're going to look at the assets of the system. And so the last thing that I'm going to talk about, so CHSI was primarily developed, to help you with that secondary data analysis and the assessment of the health disparities. So before I introduce CHSI, I'm going to introduce the population health framework that we use. This was developed by Dave Kindig, and that's another tip of the hat to the University of Wisconsin Public Health Population Health Institute. And we adapted a little bit from it just to simplify it, but we use this one because we talk about when these modifiable determinants of health, so healthcare access and quality, behavior, social factors, and the physical environment, combine in mysterious and not well understood ways with biology and individual biology and genetics, then you get population level health outcomes, which of course we measure in mortality, morbidity, and quality of life. But we use this one because it's the only one we could find that also allows us to talk right up front about when these determinants are unevenly or inequitably distributed by race, ethnicity, by socioeconomic status, by geography, or by sex or gender, then you get population level health disparities. And so all of our products and services are based on that. So really quickly, when I first started doing this, the first question we got asked is, we want to do a comprehensive health assessment. And the health department said, we do not even know where to start with the data. There are so many indicators out there. You've got chronic disease indicators. You've got environmental health indicators. Stroke has their own indicator set. Cardiovascular has. You've got infectious disease. Where do you even start? And the hospital said, there is no data on the community. All we have is data on the people that walk through our doors. There's no data, so we can't possibly assess the community. So to answer that question, we did a systematic review of all the guidance that recommended, here's what you look at, here's the outcomes and determinants. And we have a monograph, it's on our website, and it has a bunch of background and sensitivity analysis. Came up with the 42 most frequently recommended health outcomes and determinants. And these numbers behind, so it's not a thou must use these. This is so all of you guys don't have to do a systematic review and the synthesis of all the guidance that's if you wanted to know what the really smart people that have been in the business a long time said. So you'll see these numbers behind. So there was 10 of them. And so leading causes of death, 9 out of the 10 sources recommended that you look at the leading causes of death. And they were kind of silent. So that could be 3, that could be 10, that could be 15. And then I was really happy to see, and I wish it would stop doing that, really happy to see all of these social factors that have come on lately. And okay. So anyways, social factor, and you're going to see this again in a minute, because this is what we used when we said, what data do we want to put in the redesign community health status indicators? And we got as many of these indicators as we could, for which we could cover 2/3 of the counties. And then finally, that FAB requirement about the social determinants of health and the IRS regulation about being able to use that. So, and we wanted to make sure that you had adequate data to assess that, so when you're deciding when you're going to intervene, you could think about the social determinants of health, poverty, education, housing, as a potential area, all the way up through and including the behavioral interventions at the top of the pyramid, and so now CHSI. So, first released in the year 2000, owned and operated by HRSA, Dr. Fox, who had a public health background, was the director of HRSA at the time. He thought counties should have as much data about the populations in their counties and the things that are impacting the populations as possible. They came out in trifolds. There was one for all 3,141 counties, which now there's 3,143 counties. They were wildly popular, and they were put on PDFs, and people used them in their briefings, and it was a really, really nice report. But by 2004, that data was out of date, and so they retired the PDF, but everybody, including and the original partners, was AstoNatio and the Public Health Foundation, and people went to them and said, we need those. We want that again. We want you to update that. And so they convened this big group, and that's where CDC got engaged, and so did National Library of Medicine and these other partners. And they kind of did this evaluation. And they decided that they needed to be reorganized and added to, but they also needed to be put on the web so that they would be easy to update and you wouldn't have to be making these paper copies. They ended up only having enough funding put them on the web and update the existing ones. And so that's what they did. And they updated it once, so it launched in 2008 and updated it once in 2009. That's the system that those of you said that used it. And then along came the Affordable Care Act, and HRSA got a whole bunch of new jobs. And so they decided that CHSI just wasn't going to be a priority, and they actually were just going to pull the plug on it. And all those partners energized again and went out and looked for homes for it and kept coming to my team, and I kept saying, oh gosh, we can't do that. That's a big job and we don't have informatics backgrounds. But anyway, eventually my bosses said, yeah, we can do that. And so we took it on in August of 2012, and then we took 2 years to redesign it and 6 months to get it through clearance. And it's, like I said, recently launched. So here's the new things it has, just quickly before I show you. So we've got updated and refined set of peer counties. So these are counties that have been matched on 19 social, economic, and demographic variables, right? So that your peers are as much like you as on those factors, such that if you saw wildly different cardiovascular mortality numbers between your county and those of your peers, that might have some meaning. And we're in that population health framework, We've got all new data, and we've got indicators by subpopulations, and we've got census tract maps that I'll demonstrate to help you begin to identify those health disparities. And new look, new feel, and a summary comparison page, and you'll see that. Right now the plan is, because before the wireframe, the ink on the wireframes were even dry, people were asking us for additional functionality. And since a lot of what's driving the overall population health is chronic disease, we kind of said, okay, well, let's have a strategy to start with. Every other year, we'll update the data, and the off years, we'll update the functionality. I'm happy to say it has at least one indicator for everything that you see up here in black. And infant mortality, suicide, and homicide, who knew that's primary and issues in the urban areas. So those didn't make our two-thirds inclusion rule, but the Health Indicators Warehouse has that data for the half of counties for which it is. And they have one-year estimates for the large ones, 3 and 7. We could not get data on the things in red. There was no reliable, recurring source of information on homelessness, on domestic violence and child abuse, motor vehicle injuries. These things are still really important. The idea here is that we've done a lot of the other work for you. It's going to free up some of your time, hopefully, so that you can look for local sources of those data. And when we finished that systematic review in late 2011, early 2012 of the 42 most frequently recommended. So in the original cut, access to healthy food and access to recreation didn't make it. But by the time that we launched, by the time that we came up with our final set, everybody agreed that the body of evidence would meet all of our criteria, so we included indicators for those as well. And by the way, there's county-level life expectancy estimates for males and females for every county in the country in here. So any questions while I'm pulling up the site? Well, that's an interesting. Now, there are some applications that are doing indicators within congressional districts, which is starting to get more in the regions within states. Yes.
Is there a way to see, sorry, I played with it frequently enough, to choose your state and then choose your indicator and then see all the counties in your state based on the indicator?
Yeah, if you go to their site. and trends and all kind of, yes.
Just kind of going back to the question from Vermont, I know you said you checked with the different divisions within CDC. To what extent did you engage the state data stewards to find out what they're doing in terms of the data that they regularly produce? Just duplication of effort in terms of the data that's on your site versus the data that the states are putting out?
Well, I didn't find any that were doing peer county comparisons across the country. So that's the extra thing that we bring. And the trade-off in ours is having those rates that can be compared across the country. So in some cases, we have the multi-years of data. The poverty are one-year estimates. The insurance coverage are one-year estimates and are pretty up-to-date. But you guys know health outcome data at the county level, especially for rural counties, you're going to really be in a multiple years. That's what you would do, right, if you were going to compare rural counties against each other and for some of the mortality data, you would look at multiple years. And any more questions, comments, and we can continue to ask, and we have a little more time for I talked about. Yes, you do.
Different years and different data sources, and there'd be a lot of confusion.
with our, you know, the consumers and the data. So I'm wondering, I forgot to take a look, but I'm wondering if maybe it would be helpful to, when you are presenting the data in a graph or map, if you were to put the years on the end of the title. And I think there may be still some people that don't catch that, you know, if you're specifically referring to a group of years, but there you may catch some people that, you know, it's not going to dig into the metadata on a separate web page, that they can see it at the end of the title and then go, oh, this data is different because it's different years. That might catch a couple people, at least, so that you can think about that.
So I thought about that, and we had some EPIs that strongly suggested that we did that. And then I got a lesson in informatics and in developing these applications, and the fact that every time you update an indicator, do you want to have to go and do something to the informatics such that, or write those programs and codes so that on every map and every graph that also has to be updated every time? And I was thinking, no, I probably don't really, because every time you do those changes, that's an opportunity for error internally. And so I think that's good. If we hear from you guys, that is causing, we don't want to even hear the letters CHSI, because the fact that it's not totally obvious right at the beginning, and every time you see that indicator, what the years of the data are, then I will tell you that we will listen. And so if you find you're running into, I have only had that one comment one time, and I've presented this, I presented it internally 23 times while we were going through the clearance process, and I've probably done it externally. But if you're getting that, and from yours, and why is data different, if that's what they're taking away, we will fix that.
You don't.
Yeah, and so if any of you guys too have a nifty way of how that can be displayed in a way such that it doesn't take message off and it doesn't take away from the point that we're trying to make, but doesn't create that confusion either, then we would love to. And if you have any examples of, I mean, what do you guys do in your data when you update it? Is there something on every map and graph and that says Sam? We're definitely interested in suggestions. Others, comments, questions, I encourage you to go and play with it. So I've found the most interesting, anybody here from Fulton County? I forgot to ask. Georgia. So they have low smoking rates, low obesity rates, low diabetes rates, low coronary heart disease rates, and you could tell looking from CHSI, sky high stroke rates. And, you know, so if I just saw the health outcomes, I would say, oh, they're smoking and they've got obesity, and that's the conclusion I would have come in. Or if I was just looking at the risk factors, I would have never thought to look for stroke. So that's one of the things that I've looked at. So you can use it for that. I mean, that's the value of having all your health outcomes in the context of all of those. And there is a body of evidence underneath every one of those risk and protective factors that's in there. And we have some information on that body of evidence. So you should be able to see things. Often you will see unemployment, high school dropouts, children in single-parent households, And then you'll see teen pregnancy rates, you'll see some high STDs and high HIV, and so you will see in those outputs some of those things that make sense. So I should probably let you do this talk, so just really quickly, but all of you guys, who hasn't used the county health rankings and roadmaps? Anybody? Okay, well, I don't really need to say then kind of what's the difference. But I do want to bring you guys to how many of you are familiar with What Works for Health out of the website? Okay, good. So I'm glad I introduced this. They have done a marvelous, and I know it's years because Bridget was talking about doing it back in 2007 when I met her. And so they have gone in and compiled the scientific evidence. So they looked at the interventions, and they have compiled and categorized the scientific evidence, the state of the scientific evidence, on hundreds, right? Hundreds, is it 300 interventions? So aligned to all of the health behaviors that are in this system, all of the clinical care indicators, and the social and economic factors, and the physical environment. And it's one of the nicest, organized, most comprehensive set of interventions and evidence on the interventions that I have seen. So, and I mentioned I was from the Community Guide, and I am being recorded here. So, and I love the Community Guide, and I've done reviews in the Community Guide, but they don't have best practices, and they don't have some of the new emerging studies and interventions that have been done. And sometimes you can't wait for something that's undergone a systematic review. Sometimes you've got an issue, and just understanding what all's been done and having it in that one place is really valuable. So I send people there too, and I said, oh, and they have the Community Guide interventions in there. So you probably want to look to that when you start doing your intervention selection. So just summarizing, so between the two sites, you get a comprehensive set of outcomes and determinants, benchmarked against peer counties, against best performing 10% of counties, U.S. and state averages, and Healthy People 2020 targets where they're available. You get resources to help you start to identify those vulnerable populations and health disparities. County health rankings for the indicators that they've had over time give you these nice trend line graphs and trend data, rated strategies for addressing focus areas, and we both use the same population health framework to help people focus on those upstream determinants. So we did that. So I just want to talk really quickly, and one of my presenters is here, and I will let her come up and talk. We have 15 more minutes. And so I want to bring back to that new IRS regulation about they must identify and solicit input from populations that are experiencing health disparities within their jurisdiction, for those that have barriers to access to care, and I'm down in this bottom, so the members of the medically underserved, low income, and minorities, and it's an and, all three groups. And medically underserved include populations experiencing health disparities or at risk of not receiving adequate medical care as a result of being uninsured or underinsured or due to geographic, language, financial, or other barriers. And so we had a little of that information. So they must identify, solicit input, and then tell the IRS how they did that. And you know, our traditional method of identifying disparities is you take all those health outcomes we just looked at and you compare them by race, ethnicity, by socioeconomic status, by gender, by age groups, and then you identify for each one of those outcomes who's the disparately impacted population. I don't know how the hospitals are going to look at that and identify who and where they are and go and get their input, and I've got an example of that. And so I want to talk really quickly about two other methods. One I did talk about with the 20% of poverty or greater, And then one other quick one. So I put this back in. So we talked about this, and this is from Tony Eitens' report for Alameda County. This doesn't have the benchmarks in it, but this is 10 indicators, just 10 health outcomes, and then they're comparing the overall trend, health inequality overall, but then the rates for African Americans, Asian, API, Latinos, and white. And then for each one, they're kind of saying, is it going up? Is it going down? Is it going sideways? And you can just see, as the sideways is it staying the same? I don't know how you would start messaging this and look. And this is just 10, right? This isn't the 30 that we have in CHSI, and much less know who and where they were. And same thing here. So female breast cancer, Multnomah County. The red line is African Americans. The black line with the diamonds is the white population. And the green line is the Asian Pacific Islanders, and the yellow is Hispanics, and the blue is Native Americans. You look at each one of these, so we have female breast cancer deaths, infant deaths, coronary heart disease deaths, and HIV. The trends and who's most impacted for each one of just those four are all different. And so that traditional method isn't working so well if you're looking at overall population health and you're trying to identify who and what is most impacted overall. And so here are the slides from Nancy Krieger. I'm not going to go through them, but you'll have them with copies of the slide of the literature summary. What I want to tell you, though, is that they looked at all of the Massachusetts and Rhode Island 1990 data, the five leading causes of death, the five top cancer sites, HIV homicide. They looked at different areas, sizes, so they looked at zip code measures of socioeconomic, census tract measures, all different types, and they looked at all different types of SES measures. And they came out and they said that census tract poverty detected disparities missed by education, wealth, unemployment, SES indices, and also missed when you look by zip code level. So it did a much better job than those things. One of the take-homes, one of the big take-homes, they identified disparities by poverty level that were large or those that you would identify if you look by race and ethnicity. So a whole different way of looking at those disparities. And then they also identified disparities within each one of those race groups. And so they recommended those cut points, and that's what you'll see in CHSI. CSTE pilot, any of you part of the CSTE health disparities pilot? So they've taken the methodology and reproduced those results across a really wide range, and it's on the CSTE website if you want to look at those. I think everything but salmonella, and it turns out that salmonella is kind of an affluent disease. I guess you got to be able to afford whatever's carrying the salmonella. So everything but salmonella. And so they recommended looking by poverty, and that's why we did the census tracts, but recognizing, and this gets a little bit difficult to message, and you have to be conscious of this, and LA County kind of is one, and so did Seattle King County kind of addressed that. But it recognizes that 20% mark, you're getting a confluence of neighborhood risk factors, a bunch of things together that could include unemployment and housing and access to care and pollution and green space. And so, and we don't really know what factors and how, but we do know that you see it consistently in health outcome after health outcome and at population health. And so there are lots of limitations with that, all census tracts. So census tract in the desert is going to have a different set of risk factors than a farmland and in the urban areas. And census tracts are changing rapidly, so some are more rapidly than others with gentrification and natural disasters. And that's association, not cause. And some people are a little skeptical about that. And that brings us to life expectancy and what you guys saw and anybody that came to our roundtable. So we have a project. So life expectancy represents your entire population, right? And it's not affected. Amy, do you want, these are your slides. Would you like to come up here and present them? For the last couple of minutes. So the general public gets it. That's why Robert Wood Johnson has funded VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University, to make maps. You know, they're making, they've put out 5 now, and they're going to put out 15 more maps in cities. So there's likely one coming near you. In fact, I have, I'll skip my, but I will do my prize because I promised it. So, and those of you that know can't say anything, so you're not going to get this. So, of all the countries in the world, where does the United States rank on life expectancy compared to all the countries in the world? 37th. 34. Any more guess? Come on, there's a great wooden pin from New Orleans. Who said 45? Come up and get your pin. United States, according to the CIA, and it's kind of interesting, so who keeps annual tabs on life expectancy around the world? The CIA. Not the CDC. Not the WHO. WHO does studies, and so they have one that was out a few years ago. But every year, CIA calculates it for all the countries. We've fallen more than 25 places since the late 1950s. The latest research at the country level says it's women. Women are losing, so the rate of change of women has leveled off. In the other countries, it has not. And so that's driving a lot in terms of our population. Last 3 decades, so something's going on. So having life expectancy at these smaller areas is going to help us also begin to disentangle what's going on. And so let's see, we can do some. This is Amy's slide that shows, we all know this, that we spend more on health care than any other country. But when you look at it compared to where we are on life expectancy, that's really stark, right? And so this is just some work that was done comparing U.S. life expectancy, which averaged 78.2 years in 2010, to the best performing 10 countries in the world, which are on the right-hand side, and found that compared to them, at the rate of change we're at, we're at least 16 years behind at the national level. And then our friend Chris Murray at the Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation decided to look. He was intrigued. He wanted to try to find out what was going on at the country level. So he said, well, let's look within. And he mapped life expectancy for every county in the country. And the disparities and at the county level are just, I was so surprised. This really flipped a switch in me in terms of the way that I was thinking about population health. And I thought, life expectancy in some of those counties in Mississippi is 60.1 years at the county level, 18 years behind the national average in the United States. And at the same time, there's counties in the country that are well ahead of those 10 best performing counties. So place matters. It's not like every county has a completely different, totally different population. There is something in geographic areas that's helping to drive these health disparities. And then VCU came along. Actually, they were funded 8 or 9 years ago to make these maps. Now they're making a whole lot more of them. This is really resurfaced. This is Washington, D.C., that shows that when you leave D.C. and you start to go out on the red line or the orange line, any of these been there, you lose, 77 and 84, 7 years of life expectancy going from D.C. up to Montgomery County. This is New Orleans. The difference across New Orleans, 25 years of life expectancy that you lose. And that is probably, let's do my pointer, this is probably around the Ninth Ward, those of you that are familiar with New Orleans. And so this gets people's attention. They relate to it. And so this is where looking at poverty and life expectancy, so that poverty measure, and you'll see, I won't really get to Amy's slides, but they're in the slide deck. And those of you that were here last year at CSCE last year and heard David Fleming talk in the plenary that shows the life expectancy. So you'll see in some cases the poverty's low. Low levels of poverty, but they still have high disparities in the life expectancy. So this is a caution, and it's good to have both. And if you think about a census tract that's newly poor, then it's going to take a while before that manifests itself through mortality data. And of course, there's going to be some artifacts in these small areas in both one, but it's good to kind of look in these areas where it's low life expectancy and really high poverty, you can be pretty confident that you've got something going on in there. And so I'll just show you, because this will be your take home, your last. So when David Fleming and the health department looked within Seattle, King County was one of those that was better at the county level than the 10 best countries in the world. They were one of those ones in the blue. They could have stopped there, but they decided to look, take those same methods and look within. 30 years life expectancy differential between the census tracts with the highest estimates and the lowest. And so they got these maps out and they put it out and they compared it to the socioeconomic factors that we were talking about and the minority status. And then went another step farther, and they went in and they got local level data on some of these intermediary factors. So tobacco use, adverse childhood events, you guys familiar with the ACEs study and the whole life course and things that happened to you in those first 4 years. On Facebook today, it had a thing that said that childhood trauma was more associated with drug abuse in adulthood than obesity was with cardiovascular disease. And so that's some of the stuff that's coming out of ACE. So they looked at that. They looked at physical activity. And I'm just going to, that generated a whole lot of interest and a lot of new players coming to the table and engaged the community themselves. They're using a collective impact framework to bring those people together. And over that generated over $1 million of revenue coming from these outside foundations and philanthropic groups to come in and to begin to take actions which they've put out to the communities to begin to identify what some of those issues are and tackle some of those upstream factors. These maps are powerful, and these are the kinds of ways that you can use it to bring your partners in, to empower your community, because that place matters. Just because I was born, live, work, and play 6 census tracts south of another group of them cost us 15 years, and life expectancy cost us 25 years. We have a pilot, and LA has the same story, and this is powerful too, where they look by income at life expectancy and then by race, and found out that between African American males in LA and Asian Pacific Islander females, there's 15.6 years differential in life expectancy. We have a pilot. We're coming up with a guide and tool software that's going to allow everyone, every health department, to as easily as possible calculate these estimates for your own areas. We're looking for people to pilot those tools and resources and become part of this project. You only have to agree to participate on our calls and to utilize the tools and give us feedback on what could make them better. And if you're interested, you can send an email to me and we'll get you signed up. You do need to be able to have, you need access to your mortality data from 2008 to 2012. You need to either have it geocoded or want to geocode it, because we're working on getting some support for those of you that would like to do this and get geocoded. And so we'd love to have you participate, because my vision is that in a couple of years, every single one of you will have these sub-county level estimates of life expectancy and be able to be moving the needle on some of these disparities and bringing people to the table that have never wanted to come to the table before with these kind of powerful messages. So I'm going to wrap up, because we're over time and it's late and there's a banquet tonight. And thank you guys so much for staying. And if you're interested, just let me know. And so, thanks. Oh, and thanks for all the feedback. I'll go back and say we better look at putting dates on those maps and those bar charts. And so, and if you think of anything more, just write to the website.